I'm Scott Weinberger, journalist and former deputy sheriff. In my new podcast series, Cold Blooded, I'm embedded in the cold case investigation into the death of firefighter Billy Halpern. Experience this investigation in a truly unique way, untangling secrets that may reveal the answers to not only one case, but almost a dozen. Listen to Cold Blooded, The Apollo Gym Murders on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I used to have so many men.
How this beguiling woman in her 50s...
She looked like a million bucks.
...scams a bunch of famous athletes out of untold fortunes...
Nearly $10 million was all gone.
It's just unbelievable.
Hide your money in your old rich man, because she is on the prowl.
Listen to Queen of the Con, Season 5, The Athlete Whisperer, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
It's like the police knew who he was before they got here.
From iHeart Podcasts.
The medical school dean at USC was leading a secret double life.
He's breathing right now?
Yes, he's absolutely breathing. I'm a doctor, actually.
A story about money, power, and corruption.
When people fall in line, they fall in line.
Looking back, I realized, oh, everyone knew.
I'm Paul Pringle, an investigative reporter for the LA Times. Listen to Fallen Angels, a story of California corruption on the iHeart Radio app, Apple Podcast, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Now here's a highlight from Coast to Coast AM on iHeartRadio.
And welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you, Jim DiEugenio with us. Jim, what do you think the significance was of replacing the brain of President Kennedy?
Well, if you add up all the witnesses, okay, I think there's 13 of them on the record. They'll tell you that it was a severely damaged specimen. And I believe that the main reason was that they wanted to conceal all the damage to JFK's head. Okay, which I believe, and other physicians I talked to about this agree, that will probably show more than one bullet struck Kennedy, you know, in the skull.
Mm-hmm.
That's the significance of it, I believe.
You might be right about that. And
yes.
Let me ask you a question about Oswald. I've got my doubts over whether he was part of the assassination, but the one thing I can't figure out is the J.D. Tippit police officer murder that so many people say Oswald did. What do you think of that?
Well, you know, if you take a look at the timing factor of when Oswald was supposed to have left the rooming house on Beckley Street to the distance, which is almost a mile, to 10th and Patton, okay, which is where the shooting took place, I have a very hard time believing that Oswald could have negotiated that distance, you know, in the time that, you know, that most of the witnesses say that the Tippit murder took place. You know, that's one problem, you know. And then there's another thing about the shells not matching the bullets. Okay, you know, there's a difference in that there's more shells from one company than there are bullets, you know, from that same company.
Jeez.
All right. And so those don't add up. Okay. And there's a lot of witnesses who were silenced, like Akilla Clemens, who was one of the best witnesses. And she said that there were two men involved in the murder of Tippit. Okay. So, you know, I think there's a lot of problems with the Warren Commission case, you know, that of Oswald, you know, shooting J.D. Tippit, you know. So, you know, we can go on this because there's so many problems with that case. You know, then, you know, there were fingerprints that were developed off the car and they weren't Oswald's. Okay. You know, et cetera, et cetera.
And wasn't the reporter Dorothy Kilgallen, who may have been killed over this, wasn't she ready to go with a big story?
Well, She, according to a lot of sources, that she did have, she was collecting a file, you know, on the case. And one of the last things she said after going down to New Orleans is that I'm going to break this case if it's the last thing that I do, you know. And, you know, to give her a lot of credit, there were very, very, in fact, I can't think of anybody else, you know, who in the MSM, and she was part of the MSM, you know, who wrote as many stories as she did concerning concerning the JFK case.
She even had a chance to interview Jack Ruby.
Right. She was down at the trial, okay, and her and the lawyers, you know, Belli, you know, and there was another guy, I can't remember his name. They let her interview Ruby for a few minutes, yes.
There was a petty officer from the Navy, her name was Sandy Spencer, who developed some film. Tell me about her importance in all of this.
Sandy Spencer, this is an incredible story, which only surfaced because of the review board. If you can believe it, Sandy Spencer was never mentioned in the Warren Commission. And I don't think she was even talked about by the House Select Committee. You know, her name only came up, you know, in the span of the review board, 1994 to 1998. She told them that she saw pictures of JFK's autopsy that did not look like the official pictures. She was a photo processor at the Anacostia Photographic Center, which was the Pentagon Center, okay? And that did not look at all like the official photographs of the JFK case. She said that they looked like they were almost cleaned up, okay, they compared to the official photographs, you know, like he was getting ready to be embalmed or something, all right? And then she said that in, and this is a real mind-boggler, she said in one of the pictures that she saw of him in that condition, there was a brain in the foreground, okay? Jeez. You know, I mean, Jeremy Gunn, who was the chief counsel of the review board, told Doug Horn, who was cooperating with him on the medical evidence, that he thought Sandy Spencer was the most important witness and the best witness that the review board interviewed, okay?
Is she still alive, or did she pass?
No, she passed away. She passed away. Believe me, if she was still alive, I'd recommend you get her on the show.
And we would.
Yeah.
This is just truly amazing. We're coming up on 60 years, Jim. 60 yeah. years since this happened.
It's only 4 months, 4 or 5 months.
That's it.
You know, until it's 60 years.
Weren't there other places that they tried to kill Kennedy?
In the film, we tried to do something on this, okay, and the fact that there seemed to be strong evidence that there were previous assassination attempts on JFK, all right, and one of them, okay, was in Tampa, okay, one of them was in Chicago,
mm-hmm.
all right, and there was probably another one in Miami, which we didn't get to deal with. Okay, so if you measure up this evidence, and the most evidence we have on those is the Chicago plot, which I'm sure you've talked about on your show.
Yeah,
that very much. If you study that, what's so strange about that, so almost incredible to believe is that the outlines of that plot, the design, seem to resemble what happened in Dallas. Okay, you have the limousine getting off an expressway ramp, going by a tall building. You have the guy who was probably going to be the designated patsy in Chicago, a guy named Arthur Belay, you know, who was supposed to be in that building. And he has a background that was very similar to Oswald's, okay, that he was a trainer, you know, that he was in the service before, that he was stationed on a base that housed the U-2? You know, can these all be just coincidences? You know, all right. And it was supposed to be, what the landlady saw was a group of Cuban exiles who had rifles with them. Okay, and she reported them to the FBI, and that's one of the reasons that the plot was uncovered. All right, but it was covered up. This was in the first week of November, I believe November the 3rd. All right, if this wouldn't have been covered up, then it's hard to believe that Dallas could have happened, because there were so many similarities between the two plots. I've always said about this whole confluence of these assassination attempts, that the net result is this: Kennedy was not getting out of 1963. They were going to do it one way or the other, no matter how many times they tried.
Yeah, they weren't going to stop.
Right. It's not going to stop until they succeed. Okay, that's essentially what it was.
Mom met a lot of your demands over the years. This Mother's Day, get her the Bartesian cocktail maker that makes premium cocktails on demand. In just 30 seconds, have your choice of over 60 premium or seasonal cocktails, all at the touch of a button. Get $50 off on the Bartesian cocktail maker now when you buy one pack of cocktail capsules. So, for all the times you made a mess, get Mom the countertop cocktail system that makes premium cocktails without making any mess at all. For all the times you begged for soda, get her premium cocktail capsules made with real fruit juice and craft bitters. For all the times you demanded tacos for dinner, get her the Bartesian that mixes margaritas in just 30 seconds. Make Mom's Mother's Day and all the 364 days that aren't Mother's Day with a Bartesian cocktail maker at $50 off. Visit bartesian.com/mother now to get $50 off the Bartesian Premium Cocktail Maker. Bartesian, premium cocktails on demand.
I'm Scott Weinberger, journalist and former deputy sheriff. In my new podcast series, Cold Blooded, The Apollo Gym Murders, I'm embedded in the cold case investigation into the death of firefighter Billy Halpern.
It's just a shame, you know, that they took him from us.
Experience this investigation in a truly unique way, knocking on doors, uncovering new evidence, including the DNA of a potential killer.
My name is Danny Smith. I'm a detective with the Miramar Police Department. This is Scott Weinberger. We're actually reopening an old case, and your name came up.
Untangling secrets that may reveal the answers to not only one murder, but almost a dozen.
I thought they were going to kill me, so I kept my mouth shut, and I didn't say anything. All these years, I didn't say anything.
Listen to Cold Blooded, The Apollo Gym Murders on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I used to have so many men.
How this beguiling woman in her 50s.
She looked like a million bucks.
With zero qualifications.
She had a Harvard plaque.
Tricks her way past a wall of lawyers and agents.
She's got all of these Maseratis and Bentleys all in the driveway.
Is it like a mansion?
Yes, it's a mansion. That this queen of the con uses to scam some of the biggest names in professional sports out of untold fortunes.
About $6 million.
Approximately $11 million.
Nearly $10 million was all gone.
Employing whatever means necessary to bleed her victims dry.
She would probably have sex with one of her clients.
Hide your money in your old rich man, because she is on the prowl.
Listen to Queen of the Con, Season 5, The Athlete Whisperer, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
And one of the things they wanted to do was to shut down Bobby Kennedy, and they did that by killing John.
Yes, that was, if you saw the film, we had David Talbot talk about this, you know, and Bobby Kennedy, I guess you could say, was the first critic of the official story, because on the day of the assassination, he calls up John McCone, the director of the CIA at the time, and he says, "Were your guys involved in this horror?" All right.
Wow.
Then he calls in one of the Cuban exiles, Terry Ruiz. All right. And he starts questioning him about it. And then later on, he put one of his guys, you know, on an investigation of the mob to see if they were. And so was Bobby Kennedy was way ahead of everybody on this thing.
He knew.
And then, of course, I totally believe that he knew that the Oswald thing was a cover story. But then J. Edgar Hoover, once JFK was dead, J. Edgar Hoover now did not have to listen to anything Bobby Kennedy said, and he ripped out his private line into his office like a week and a half after the assassination. All right, and so any control that Bobby Kennedy would have had over the FBI investigation was now gone. Now, one of the most interesting things about this, and I'm sure you're familiar with this story I'm about to tell you, is that a few days after the assassination, Bobby Kennedy left a message for William Walton, who was going on a culture ambassadorship to Moscow. And he called him to his house in Hickory Hill. And he said, please stop by before you leave. So when Walton got there, Bobby Kennedy and Jackie Kennedy were sitting at the dining room table, you know, and they had composed letters meant to go to the Kremlin in Moscow. And he was going to get them to there through this George Bolshakov guy, mm-hmm. who Bobby Kennedy knew. And the essence of the letters was, but he's saying Lee Harvey Oswald was responsible for this, we know that this was a large domestic conspiracy, all right? We also know that unlike with President Kennedy, you will not be able to continue your détente with Lyndon Johnson because he is much too beholden to big business for you to do that. But very shortly, I will resign as Attorney General. I will then run for office. Then I will go ahead and run for the presidency. And at that time, we will be able to continue the work that my brother and you were doing on this.
Wow.
I mean, that's how smart Bobby Kennedy was. Can you believe that? You know, to be able to predict all that stuff in advance.
He knew. He knew.
Yeah. Yeah. Definitely.
When you put together Destiny Betrayed about Jim Garrison, what led Garrison, Jim, to try to find out what was going on?
Well, because what happened is that in New Orleans, okay, and it's incredible that this got left out in the Warren Commission, but it did, you know. The thing that struck Garrison is if Lee Harvey Oswald is supposed to be a communist, why is he hanging out with all of these Cuban exiles, you know, who want to see Castro overturned, all right, in Cuba?
Handing out leaflets, fair play for Cuba.
Yeah. Why is he hanging out with these Cuban exiles, and why is he stamping this 544 Camp Street? When, in fact, when Garrison went down there, you know, he discovers that, wait a minute, Guy Bannister had his office, you know, at this address. So why is a supposed communist have all these conservative right-wing kind of, you know, ties to people that he shouldn't be going near? Okay, and so the more he dug into this, okay, the more he was convinced that Oswald was really what you call in the trade an agent provocateur, you know, somebody who was faking, you know, being a communist, but he was really some kind of a government agent. And that's, of course, one of the whole keystones of the JFK case.
Right.
You know, yeah, exactly. The CIA essentially set up Oswald.
Do you think Oswald knew what was happening?
No. I think that day, on the day of the assassination, I think he realized very quickly what was happening. All right. And I think that's why when he went to his boarding house there, that he took out his handgun. Okay. And then, you know, went to a theater. All right. And I think he was waiting for somebody to get in contact with him. Now, I'm sure you know about the famous call to, I think his name is William Hurt. Okay. No, John Hurt.
John.
On Saturday, John Hurt, right. On Saturday night, Oswald tried to make a phone call to John Hurt in North Carolina. Okay. John Hurt was a former military officer. Oswald wrote down his name and his phone number and gave it to one of his secretaries. Okay, that this is a phone call that he wanted to make. The Secret Service took a look at this and they vetoed the phone call. But one of the secretaries took the paper out and kept it. And that's how we know that on Saturday night, Oswald was trying to contact this guy. Now, how on earth, George, how on earth did he know about this guy? You know,
exactly.
Isn't that incredible?
It is. And on when he came out on film and said he was a patsy, don't we have voice stress analysis equipment available today, Jim, to analyze that to see if he was lying or not with that one word?
Somebody already did it. There was a guy named O'Toole, okay, who wrote a book about that subject. And he took the PSC, all right, and he went ahead and measured that statement. And he said that Oswald was telling the truth.
Wow.
Listen to more Coast to Coast AM every weeknight at 1 a.m. Eastern. And go to coasttocoastam.com for more.
I'm Scott Weinberger, journalist and former deputy sheriff. In my new podcast series, Cold-Blooded, I'm embedded in the cold case investigation into the death of firefighter Billy Halpern. Experience this investigation in a truly unique way, untangling secrets that may reveal the answers to not only one case, but almost a dozen. Listen to Cold-Blooded, the Apollo Gym Murders on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I used to have so many men.
How this beguiling woman in her 50s...
She looked like $1 million.
...scams a bunch of famous athletes out of untold fortunes...
Nearly $10 million was all gone.
It's just unbelievable.
Hide your money in your old Richmond, because she is on the prowl.
Listen to Queen of the Con, Season 5, The Athlete Whisperer, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
It's like the police knew who he was before they got here.
From iHeart Podcasts.
The medical school dean at USC was leading a secret double life.
Is he breathing right now?
Yes, he's absolutely breathing. I'm a doctor, actually.
A story about money, power, and corruption.
When people fall in line, they fall in line.
Looking back, I realized, oh, everyone knew.
I'm Paul Pringle, an investigative reporter for the LA Times. Listen to Fallen Angels, a story of California corruption on the iHeart Radio app, Apple Podcast, or wherever you get your podcasts.